Some remarkable prophecy giving us 200 years of history in advance. Today on A Daily Walk.
I know I'm recounting to you all these historical facts. Stay with me. Again, keep in mind that he's writing these things 200 years before they ever happen, before these people ever come to the throne. That's what's so fascinating about this. That's why the critics will say this can't be right. There's no way that Daniel could have wrote that. It's not possible that someone could be that specific. Unless, of course, God was behind it.
Happy Thanksgiving, and welcome to A Daily Walk with Pastor John Randall of Calvary Chapel, San Juan Capistrano. We'll meet you in Daniel chapter 11. This section of Daniel's remarkable prophecy provides fascinating historical detail that not only confirms the historicity of Scripture, but its veracity as well. In other words, you can rely on the Bible because it is true. So this is much more than a history lesson. It's a prophecy lesson. Here's Pastor John.
In Daniel chapter 10, Daniel was given an introduction to his fourth and final vision. And within his final vision, Daniel lays out for us a prophetic timeline that extends from the reign of Darius the Mede all the way to the final ruler of the world known as the Antichrist. The 11th chapter of the book of Daniel has come under tremendous attack from the critics of the Bible. And the reason for their opposition is that there are an estimated 135 fulfilled prophecies within the chapter. Now, we're not going to go over all of them tonight, but we'll definitely highlight some of them. The prophecies are recorded with such accuracy that the skeptics cannot see, nor do they believe that a man could write 200 years of history in advance, because that is what is recorded in the book of Daniel chapter 11. Now, as believers, that doesn't surprise us, because we know in the book of Isaiah chapter 46 that the Lord declared, "Remember the former things long past, for I am God and there is no other. I am God and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times things which have not been done, saying, my purpose will be established and I will accomplish all my good pleasure." The Lord declared through his prophet Isaiah, "I say these things before they come to pass. I put these things into motion. This is in essence all part of my plan." And Daniel is going to speak forth the word of God. He's going to write out 200 years of history in advance. And Daniel chapter 11 divides itself into two sections. Section 1, which is in verses 1 through 35, deal with the Gentile rulers from the Persian Empire to Greece and how they impacted the Jewish people. Then when you come to section 2, which is verses 36 through 45, Daniel will then look at the last Gentile ruler who will be in power when Jesus comes in his second coming. That is the Antichrist. Now, some of the details that I'm going to mention in the first section, it would be very similar to that of a history lesson. But it's more than a history lesson. It's a prophecy lesson that was written, as I said, hundreds of years before it was fulfilled. And by the way, that is one of the main aspects that differentiates the Bible from other religious or historical or even inspirational works. Because throughout the Bible, future events are predicted with verifiable accuracy. The Bible predicts the future to the extent that it cannot be dismissed as mere coincidence. Only the omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient God has the capacity to breathe these things into existence. You remember the Bible tells us that it is God breathed. God spoke, God breathed into this. It's the living word of God, and men moved as the Lord moved, as the Spirit of God moved upon their hearts to write these things. Now, what I want to do this evening is do my best to reference and highlight some of the past history that Daniel recorded in advance, and we'll see how far we get tonight. The first two verses we read in Daniel chapter 11 speak of four Medo-Persian kings. It says in verse 1, also, in the first year of Darius the Mede, even I stood up to confirm and strengthen him. And now I will tell you the truth. Behold, three more kings will arise in Persia, and the fourth shall be far richer than them all. By his strength, through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Greece. Daniel prophesied that there would be four kings that would come out of Persia, and that the fourth king would be wealthier than the first three before him. And the fourth king would also stir up or antagonize the kingdom of Greece. The three more kings that followed Cyrus to the throne were Cambyses, he's not mentioned in the Old Testament, Pseudo-Smerdis, and then thirdly, Darius the First, who's mentioned in the book of Ezra, chapters 5 and 6. And then the fourth king of the Medo-Persian Empire that was far richer than them all is Xerxes the First. And Xerxes the First, who is actually Ahasuerus in the book of Esther. With all of his wealth, he gathered one of the largest armies that was assembled in the ancient world. The Greek historian Herodotus said that the army of Xerxes consisted of 5,283,222 men. Now, whether that is accurate or not, that's for you to decide. But besides that, he had the Carthaginians consisting of 300,000 men, and he had 200 ships in his navy. Xerxes set out to conquer Greece, and in his ground attack, he had some success in what was called the Battle of Thermopylae, and he defeated King Leonidas of Sparta and his forces. But on the sea, his navy actually was defeated, and from those defeats, Xerxes never really recovered. But he was the greatest of those final four kings, and yet he was eventually defeated, and he was replaced by another, recorded in verses 3 and 4, as Daniel now is told of Alexander the Great. You remember that it started with Babylon, and then it went to the Medo-Persian Empire, and then from the Medo-Persian Empire, it went to the Grecian Empire. And in verse 3, it says, then a mighty king shall arise, who shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. And when he has arisen, his kingdom shall be broken up and divided toward the four winds of heaven. But not among his posterity, nor according to his dominion with which he ruled, for his kingdom shall be uprooted even for others besides these. The mighty king of verse 3 is Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great became king of Macedon at 20 years old. And only in 13 short years, he amassed the largest empire in the ancient world, an empire that covered 3,000 miles. And what is fascinating is that he conquered the known world without the benefit of modern technology and weaponry. In his day, the troops would move primarily on foot, and communication was face-to-face. Alexander was motivated by his father's desire to defeat Persia and to get revenge for their threats against Greece. Alexander invaded Persia, which lay across the Aegean Sea in Asia Minor. It's modern-day Turkey. And after three grueling years of warfare and three decisive battles, Alexander the Great crushed the Persian armies at the Tigris River and conquered the mighty Persian Empire, including the legendary city of Babylon. Then at the age of 32, Alexander died prematurely in the palace of Nebuchadnezzar II. Now, Daniel mentions here in verse 4 that his kingdom, that is the kingdom that Alexander the Great had amassed, would be divided into the four winds from heaven. Because Alexander did not have a legitimate heir to take his place, his kingdom was divided to the four winds. The four winds refers to the four generals that ended up taking over his kingdom. However, these generals were incapable of maintaining the kingdom of Greece to the extent that Alexander had during his reign. Now, all of that said, let me just remind you that these details were all the future to Daniel. They're all the future to him. For at the time of this prophecy, listen to this, Greece did not even exist as a united empire, much less an empire divided among four generals. But Daniel is predicting this in advance. One of the benefits of Alexander the Great's conquest as it relates to Christianity is that it allowed for the Greek language and for the Greek culture to spread throughout the known world, which would eventually help spread the gospel and the Greek New Testament. That was really Alexander's desire. He wanted the world to be a melting pot. He wanted people to be educated, and so he would bring in the Hellenistic culture, and people would just embrace it. And as a result, God used that. It was all part of God's plan. Got the Greek New Testament out there, as well as the spread of the gospel. Now, as you move into verses 5 through 35, the following prophecies focus primarily on the ongoing, long-standing conflict between two of the divisions of Alexander's empire. The northern kingdom in Syria, known as the Seleucid dynasty, and then you have the southern kingdom of Egypt, known as the Ptolemaic dynasty. The reason these conflicts are outlined in Daniel is because of their direct impact on Israel. And Israel was located in between these two kingdoms and often was caught in the middle of the confrontations between the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom, Syria and Egypt. Now, the king of the north and the Seleucids became stronger than Ptolemy in the south, but both dynasties had extended generational lines with many successors. Daniel does not record all of the generations for us in this prophecy, but he does mark some of the more important ones. And so, beginning in verse 5, also the king of the south shall become strong, as well as one of his princes. He shall gain power over him and have dominion. His dominion shall be a great dominion. Now, at the end of some years, they shall join forces, for the daughter of the king of the south shall go to the king of the north to make an agreement. But she shall not retain the power of her authority, neither he nor his authority shall stand, but she shall be given up with those who brought her, and with him who begot her, and with him who strengthened her in those times. In verse 5, the king of the south is Ptolemy the First Cambyses. Write that down. He's the one who is referred to as the stronger than he. That is, he is the king of Syria, the Seleucus the First. So you have the king of the south, Ptolemy the First, and then you have the stronger than he. That is the king of Syria, who is Seleucus the First. Ptolemy and Seleucus. You're going to hear a lot about those guys tonight. So get ready. Verse 6, Daniel prophesied. Again, in advance, before these people ever came into power, he prophesied that one day the north and the south would join forces. Daniel said that it would take place at the end of some years. And that's exactly what happened. Because after 30 years, the king of the north and the king of the south, they both passed away. Following their deaths, their kingdoms continued to rival one another, but their successors decided to form an alliance through marriage. Now, this was common in that culture. You remember Solomon ended up marrying an Egyptian princess in order to forge an alliance with Egypt in order to bring peace to the kingdom. So this was very common. So they decided that they were going to forge an alliance by way of marriage. Daniel said that the daughter of the south would go to the king of the north. Now, the king of the south, Ptolemy II, gave his daughter, Berenice, a Seleucid queen, to the king of the north named Antiochus II. You with me? Ptolemy I, Ptolemy II, just basically second, third, fourth, fifth, and so on. Well, anyways, he gives his daughter to the north. But in order for the marriage and for the alliance to go through, Ptolemy II demanded that Antiochus II divorce his wife, whose name was Laodicea. Laodicea. And so neither the marriage nor the alliance could go through unless he was willing to divorce his wife. And so what did he do? Well, he divorced her. But only a few years later, the alliance falls apart because Ptolemy dies, and then Antiochus takes back his wife, Laodicea, and she ended up, in order to take revenge, murders him and his new Egyptian wife, Berenice, and their infant son. So like Daniel said, the power didn't last. It faded. And the alliance did not last. Following the death of Ptolemy II and his daughter Berenice, Daniel prophesies of the one who would take his place. Guess who it was? You guessed it. Ptolemy III. In verse 7, "But from a branch of her roots one shall arise in his place, who shall come with an army, enter the fortress of the king of the north, and deal with them and prevail. And he shall also carry their gods captive to Egypt, and their princes, and their precious articles of silver and gold, and he shall continue more years than the king of the north." Ptolemy III Euergetes, that was his full name. I'm sure you wanted to know that. In verse 9, it says, "Also the king of the north shall come to the king of the south, but shall return to his own land." But Ptolemy III Euergetes took his father's place on the throne of Egypt, and he prepared to avenge the death of his sister Berenice by attacking the northern kingdom. Daniel said here in verse 7, he will deal with them and prevail. And again, that is exactly what happened. For Ptolemy III not only conquered Seleucus II in the Third Syrian War, but he also killed Laodicea, put her to death. And with a great army, he ended up taking all of Asia from Mount Taurus to India, and then he returned back to Egypt, the victor. Daniel also tells us in verse 8 that when he returned to Egypt, Ptolemy would carry their gods captive along with their articles of silver and gold. Historically, we know that after conquering the fortress of the king of the north, Ptolemy III, Euergetes, returned to Egypt with 4,000 talents of gold and 40,000 talents of silver. The estimated value was $160 million, along with 2,500 idols and idolatrous vessels. And in ancient times, when one nation would conquer another nation, they would carry their gods away captive. That was just like saying, your gods couldn't defeat our gods, and so we're taking them with us. And that's exactly what they did, taken as spoils of victory. Well, the conflict didn't end there between Ptolemy and the Seleucids, because in verse 10, it says, "His sons shall stir up strife and assemble a multitude of great forces, and one shall certainly come and overwhelm and pass through. Then he shall return to his fortress and stir up strife, and the king of the south shall be moved with rage and go out and fight with him, with the king of the north, who shall muster a great multitude, but the multitude shall be given into the hand of his enemy. And when he has taken away the multitude, his heart will be lifted up. He will cast down tens of thousands, but he will not prevail." In Daniel chapter 11, here verses 10 through 19, Daniel prophesies of events that indicate Syria in the north would gain control over Egypt in the south, And they would also, listen to this, gain control of the Holy Land or of Israel. With the control of the Holy Land, this would set the stage for the persecution in Israel brought about by the wicked Syrian king Antiochus Epiphanes. In Daniel chapter 11, verses 21 through 35, we'll see that in a moment. But it says here in verse 10 that the sons would stir up strife. This is in reference to the successors of Seleucus II, who continued the great war against Egypt. And it says that one of his sons shall pass through them. And this is in reference to Antiochus III, called himself Antiochus III the Great. And he was the one that restored to Syria the territory as far south as Gaza. And that, of course, stirred up the king of the south, just like Daniel prophesied. I know I'm recounting to you all these historical facts. Stay with me. Again, keep in mind that he's writing these things 200 years before they ever happen, before these people ever come to the throne. That's what's so fascinating about this. That's why the critics will say, this can't be right. There's no way that Daniel could have wrote that. It's not possible that someone could be that specific. Unless, of course, God was behind it. Verse 11, Daniel said that the king of the south shall be moved with rage. He will go out and fight with him, mustering a great multitude, but he would be given over to the hand of the enemy. And when he has taken away the multitude, his heart will be lifted up, and he will cast down tens of thousands, but he will not prevail. Again, friends, that is exactly what happened. Just as Daniel had predicted, the king of the south, who was Ptolemy the fourth, met Antiochus the third, the great, on the battlefield in Raphia. And each army possessed about 70,000 soldiers. And the battle resulted in complete victory for Egypt. And at that moment, Ptolemy the fourth was so excited about his victory, he ended up not regaining control of important territory, but instead, as Daniel said, he was so proud, he just ended up returning home. His heart was lifted up, it says in verse 12. And for the next 14 years, there was seemingly peace between Syria and Egypt. Now, although Antiochus III was defeated, losing his entire army, he escaped, by the way, almost being captured. He fled to the desert, but he kept on fighting. And Antiochus III turned his attention toward the east, gathering strength and wealth, and he advanced to the borders of India as far north as Caspian. And then he would again engage in battle.
This is a Daily Walk. Glad you could join us today for our study in Daniel with Pastor John Randall. CD copies are available upon request for the cost of $5. Either go to adailywalk.org or call us at 877-242-0828. I should also mention you can either hear our program through the website at adailywalk.org. We also have an app. It's free, and Pastor John's messages are available there as well. Do a search for CCSJC to download our app. What can we learn from a man like Daniel that lived nearly 2,400 years ago? Quite a bit. And that's uncovered in a book we'd like to get into your hands called Living Among Lions. I'm sure you'd agree, being a Christian in a world that's becoming more hostile toward the things of God isn't easy. So how is a believer to respond in such an unfriendly environment? Well, Living Among Lions covers three characteristics that made Daniel strong in an environment very much like ours: conviction, commitment, and courage. As Daniel possessed these qualities, God gave him favor and supernatural power. As you read this amazing book, you'll learn how to not only survive, but thrive like Daniel in today's Babylon. The cost is $15. You can request it by calling 877-242-0828 or do so online at adailywalk.org. If you could offer a financial gift this month, that would be a huge blessing. It's your free will offering that allows us to come to you on the radio like this. We believe this is a critical time in human history. People are looking for hope and answers. And of course, they'll find that in God and His Word. Radio is being used mightily by God right now, so thank you for standing with us. Donations to the ministry can be made at adailywalk.org. We've been blessed recently by wonderful emails and calls from listeners who are being helped by this radio ministry. Would that describe you? We want to hear your story too. And yes, Pastor John reads these emails. Contact us by email at adailywalk@gmail.com. Stay connected with Pastor John through social media. Look for Pastor John on Twitter at PJRandall7 and on Instagram at John P. Randall. From Pastor John and his wife Michelle and all of us here at A Daily Walk, happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. May God richly bless you. A Daily Walk is brought to you by Calvary Chapel, San Juan Capistrano.